If we do not communicate effectively, eventually we will hit a place in our ministries where we either get stuck or lose traction. Even if we've developed a clear mission and vision, even if we've figured out what it looks like to develop leaders, even if we've figured out what our discipleship path should look like, if we are not communicating effectively, eventually we'll get stuck.
You're listening to the 95 Podcast from the team at 95 Network, where we host conversations specifically to support leaders in small and mid-sized churches. Well, welcome back to the 95 Podcast. It's Austin again, and Dale is still out on sabbatical. So we've got another unique episode for you. It's kind of just a lot for me today, which is sort of fun. It was fun to actually listen back to what we're sharing with you today and just reminisce on some of the opportunities we've had to just connect with pastors over the years. If you've followed us for just a little while, you know that we used to do events very regularly. We would do anywhere between 2 and 4 local events every single month from probably 2018 until the beginning of 2020. That was just a thing that we were always doing, staying consistent with. And obviously that got interrupted a little bit with COVID and everything like that. And we've kind of shifted some of those efforts, but we're getting back to them. We had just kind of a regular message we were sharing for 2 years. We called it Growth Engines, and we would walk through 5 core actions for a healthy small church. And we've shared actually one of these sessions before on the podcast. I'll link it in the show notes, but it was a workshop version of Dale's message on mission and vision. Today, we wanted to share my session, which was the 4th session on effective communications. And you know, it's interesting. This is actually back before the pandemic as well, just like our last episode was. And it's really kind of fun to reminisce as I am still talking about content and websites and digital ministry and all of those things that we kind of take for granted now. And at that point, we were just trying to convince people of the value of it. And so it's cool to see the shift that's happened since we shared this with leaders. But this specific conference was at Ozark Christian College in Joplin, Missouri. We probably were presenting to, 200 or 300 pastors there. And it was just a great day. And so I hope you enjoy this. It is meaty. There's a lot of stuff I cover. And so, you know, it's totally fine if you need to come back and consume it in 2 or 3 different segments, but I hope that it's a value to you and just a support in your ministry. So here is my presentation on effective communications.
My name is Austin Savage. I'm the managing director here at 95 Network. And basically what that means is I do everything that Dale doesn't do. So we just kind of partner together in this, and it's a lot of fun. But I wanted to start off just by sharing a little bit about me, kind of why I'm standing in front of you guys at all. I'm sure you noticed that I'm young. And so anyways, just a little bit of my story to kind of give you guys a picture of why I'm here. I grew up in the church. I've grown up in ministries my whole life. My dad was a small church pastor at a small church in Normal, Illinois. That's where I'm from. Does anybody know where that is? Awesome. Most people. That's good. You guys are pretty close. We're pretty close. So that's fair. And then should you know where it is? It is. It's actually a pretty cool place. But anyways, my mom was also a CEO of a national ministry called Hearts at Home. And so I kind of grew up just being part of that and ministering at their conferences where they talked to thousands of moms. It was just part of my life. So grew up leading in the church, grew up serving in the church at 13. I started leading worship at my church for our congregation. There was a leader there who really saw me, saw like leadership qualities in me and started to empower me. Started leading at 13 and started figuring out what it looked like to lead people on this team who were 40 and 50 years my elder, and just kind of learned what it looked like to be a leader. To tell you how weird I was at that same time, just for fun, I sat in on elder meetings for 6 months because I was just curious how church leadership works. So I'm weird. I don't know. I get it. But since then, I've had the opportunity to help plant 2 churches, and I've also worked with the Unstuck group for a little bit. But my passion for the church, still to this day, it falls back on one experience that I had, that my family had in my sophomore year of high school. That was the year that my dad, who had pastored this church for many, almost 20 years, had an affair. And so as we kind of walked through that season, I got to watch the effects of my dad's affair on the church. This church that he had faithfully led for a really, really long time, it was pretty healthy. It had grown up to about 300 people in attendance. And the week after, a lot of stuff happened, but the week after he shared with the church about his affair, it completely cut in half. The next week, the church went down to 150 in attendance. And over the next 2 years that I continued to serve there, I watched that church go from 150 to 50. And it broke my heart. But what I got to see is the effects that leadership has on a church. I got to see firsthand the effect that the health of a leader has on the health of a church. And that's why I'm here today, because I don't want the same thing that happened to that church, the same thing that happened to my dad, to happen in any of your ministries. That's why Dale and I both do what we do, because we never want any of you to get to a place in ministry where you are so exhausted, so frustrated, so isolated, so discontent, whatever, that you get to a place where you do something stupid to hurt the ministry that you're doing in your community. And so for me, that's why I'm here. I've been in church ministry, church leadership for over 10 years, really. But it all comes down to that experience for me. So again, I just want to thank you guys for being here, because it's just as much an encouragement to Dale and I that you guys are taking time to invest in your ministry and invest in your leadership. So thank you so, so much for being here. But I get to talk to you today about communications. This is my favorite topic. I love communications. I love being able to share about it, because this is a topic that is not talked about a lot in the church. It's something that's often ignored, especially in recent years, and especially in smaller churches as we're working with them all across the country. And so, really, really excited, but the best way to start is to kind of cover where we've come from. So we started the day off. So you guys remember, we talked about mission and vision, which is defining who you are and where you're headed. Why do you exist, and what are you trying to accomplish in your community? That's your mission and vision. It's the foundation of everything that you do as a church. And then we spent some time talking about leadership development, which is how do we structure our ministries around Ephesians 4, the call and the structure for that our churches should be, and how do we start developing leaders and equipping the saints to help us accomplish the mission that we have for our ministry. And then we moved on and talked about creating a discipleship pathway, which is saying, what are the next steps that we wanted to provide for people on their spiritual journey with Jesus? And so as we just talked about, your discipleship path is what those next steps are. Okay, so your discipleship path is what. Communications is how you move people to and through those next steps. So your discipleship path is what those next steps are. Communications is how you move people to and through those next steps. Does that make sense, generally? Cool. Awesome. I'm going to ask you questions all throughout, so you can just look at me or you can respond. It's totally fine. Quick story to get us started. I got married about 2.5 years ago to my gorgeous wife, Larissa. And as many of you guys know, for most couples, as they are getting ready to get married, they go through something called premarital counseling. It was a lot of fun. We really enjoyed it. We went through it with a couple that we were friends with, actually the mentor who kind of empowered me as a leader. And during one of our sessions of premarital counseling, the couple that we were going through it with, they said this. They said, communication is going to be one of the hardest things that you guys learn how to do as a couple, but it's going to be one of the most important things that you learn how to do. And I remember when they said that, I was like, communication. Like, how hard could that be? Larissa and I, we love each other. We like to hang out. We like to talk. Like, how hard could communication be? And then something happens called conflict, which I'm sure nobody in here has ever experienced. But conflict occurs in marriage, and usually there's some level of miscommunication that's at the core of it, whether it's communicating the wrong thing, whether it's communicating the right thing the wrong way, communicating too much, communicating too little, all sorts of things can lead to conflict. And so for us, it happened not even a week after we were married. We were on our honeymoon in Asheville, North Carolina. Who's been to Asheville? A few, less than normal Illinois. You guys should probably go to cooler places. But anyways, we went to Asheville, North Carolina. We loved it. It was awesome. It's a beautiful area. And on our honeymoon, we decided one day we wanted to go to downtown Asheville. And so any of you guys who had been to downtown Asheville, you know that downtown, it's not just like here's downtown. Like, it's not just all together. It's kind of like there's a strip of stores like here. There's a couple blocks down. There's another strip of stores. It's a little scattered. And so we didn't do any preparation and had no idea what to expect. And so we just drive to downtown Asheville. We're driving around, and we cannot find a place to park. We're looking all over. We're kind of confused because we're like, we don't want to park somewhere that's not close to the things we actually want to go to. And we're getting a little frustrated. And we're starting to have one of those, like, car arguments that you have sometimes, which I'm sure, again, that none of you guys have ever experienced. But we're starting to get a little frustrated, a little heated. We're not communicating well. And so eventually, we're just driving. I drive like 2 miles outside of downtown Asheville. I find this empty gravel parking lot. I just pull into it, pull into an empty parking spot, and throw the car in park and let Larissa figure it out. That's kind of how we handle conflict. Anyways, we're getting better. We're getting better. But anyways, so she 5 minutes pass or so, and she's looking on her phone. She finds a map of the area, and she finds out that there's like a coffee shop a few miles up that should have parking that's central to where we want to go. And so I'm like, awesome, conflict over, we're good. And so I start throwing the car in reverse, and we start going backwards. And Larissa adds one more thing. She's like, wouldn't it just be easier if you went straight? And again, we're in an empty parking lot. There are no other cars here. And I'm like, sure. Like, I don't want to add any conflict here. Like, if you want me to go straight, I will go straight. So I throw the car in drive. I gun it forward. And what I did not realize was, you know those little, like, cement blocks that they put in front of parking spots? There was not just one. There were two of those in front of where we were parked. And my little Toyota Camry was going fast enough to go up and over both. And I kid you not, it was like a seesaw. We were completely stuck. And I was mad. I was angry. I was frustrated and embarrassed, all of those things. And I was just worried that we wouldn't be able to get my car off and how we were going to get home to Normal, Illinois. Eventually, my front tires hit down, and I was able to kind of get us up and over, and we were able to get back, and the car's still running today. It's pretty awesome. But the reason I share that story, because the reason that Larissa and I got into that situation is because we were not communicating well. The reason we got stuck is because we were not communicating well. And the same thing is true in our churches. If we do not communicate effectively, eventually we will hit a place in our ministries where we either get stuck or lose traction, even if we've developed a clear mission and vision. Even if we figured out what it looks like to develop leaders, even if we figured out what our discipleship path should look like, if we are not communicating effectively, eventually we'll get stuck. Is your effectiveness being crippled? Is your effectiveness being crippled? And I really want you to think about that, because as I just mentioned, the inability to communicate effectively, it really does cripple our effectiveness as a ministry. We are not able to accomplish as much in our community than we would be if we were intentional about how we communicate. Not being able, as your notes say, to accurately share and interpret information, it's led to things like rampant divorce, the generation gap that we talked about earlier, low morale, and declining churches. All of those things at some level can be attributed to poor communication. It has serious effects. And we see this in Scripture. Again, in your notes, it says, poor communication leads to chaos and selfishness. In Scripture, there's a book called Judges. I'm sure all of you guys are familiar with the book of Judges. It was a crazy time in the history of Israel. But towards the end of the book, there's kind of this theme that's repeated, and it says this. It says, in those days, Israel had no king, and all the people did whatever seemed right in their own eyes. You see, this was a time when Israel lacked consistent leadership, right? That's kind of what marks the book. But it wasn't just that they didn't have a leader, right? It wasn't just that they didn't have a person in charge. The reality is, during this time, Israel didn't have someone guiding them through their next steps with God. They didn't have someone guiding them through those next steps. And not having that person to guide them through those steps is what led them to doing whatever seemed right in their own eyes. And you guys know all the crazy things that happened in Judges as a result. If we bring that to our context, the same thing is true. Poor communication, it allows opportunities for agendas. It allows opportunities for division within our church, because people will always choose to do things in a way that seems best to them, in a way that seems right to them. And that's not because people are mean. It's not because people are trying to ruin things. The reality is, if something is confusing, then people are going to try to make it clear. And the last, and what we want to do as leaders is try to jump in front of that, jump in front of those agendas, that division, and make things as clear as possible so that people understand and feel comfortable with what's happening so that they can take those next steps and not feel like they're the ones who have to create that clarity. Does that make sense? Cool. So in this session, we're just going to walk through 10 things for you to consider for effective communication. These are all across the board. The first three might be a little new for some of us, but the last seven will be more familiar. But before we get into that, there's two things that I want to cover, and these are both things for you to fill in your handout here. The first one is I just want to cover the purpose of communications. Why are we even talking about this in the first place? And so the first blank for you to fill in here is communication is about leading people through their next steps with Christ from the beginning stages of faith through the rest of their journey alongside your church. Communication is about leading people through their next steps with Christ. Again, communication is leadership. It's how we lead people. It's how we communicate. It's how we make next steps clear. If we can't communicate effectively, then we cannot lead effectively. And then the second thing for you to fill in is this. Remember, if there's not clarity, there's confusion. If there's not clarity around someone's next steps with God, then there's confusion. And the last thing that we want to do as a ministry is create confusion around someone's relationship with God. Agreed? Awesome. All right. So we are going to jump into 10 things to consider for effective communications right after I take this sip of coffee. Sponsored by, I don't know where this is from, Chick-fil-A. Sponsored by Chick-fil-A. Christian Chicken. All right. Number one is to recognize that we are living through the greatest communication shift in 500 years. The greatest communication shift in 500 years. Who's heard that? A few of you. Okay. So if you follow any organizations like Pro Church Tools or some other communications organizations out there, they talk about this all the time, and it's kind of what influences the work that they do. But the reality is, it's true. So you guys didn't come here for a history lesson, but I'm going to give you one anyways. So a little over 500 years ago, something came out called the Gutenberg printing press. Who's heard of that? More hands. I love it. All right, so the Gutenberg printing press came out, and it completely revolutionized the way that we communicate. We were able to mass produce printed material. And the church was really good about leveraging that. And that's one of the reasons that the Bible is one of the most, if not the most, printed books in all of history. The Gutenberg printing press came out. It revolutionized how we communicate. And really, for the past 500 years, that has been the way we communicate, dominantly through spoken words and written words. That's how, as a culture, we have predominantly communicated. And only in the last 15 to 20 years has that started to change. For many of you in this room, if you remember back to when the internet first came out, it really didn't change that much. It was cool. It was new. It was kind of a new way to store information. But it didn't really change that much about how we live our daily lives. Well, in the last 15 to 20 years, that has started to change. Digital communication has really started to take the place of printed communication in a way that doesn't just change how we share and store information. It changes how we live our daily lives. It changes how we ask our questions. It changes how we interact with our friends. It changes how we interact with the organizations and the companies that we care about. Like, it changes everything about how the people in our communities are living their lives. And a lot of churches, as we're working with them, are operating like this shift has not happened. A lot of our churches are communicating to people as if this shift has not taken place. And so you have a quote in your handout that I always like to cover, and it says this. It's from our friend Gavin Adams. He's a pastor, I think, in Georgia. It says, "Culture is like gravity. You can spend your whole life fighting against it. You can ignore its implications, or you can learn how to leverage it." And those are the three options that we have when it comes to this shift in communications. You can fight it. And that looks like a pastor saying, you know what? I think that this reliance on the internet is ridiculous. I think that it takes away from authentic connection, and we are not going to invest there. That's fighting it. You can ignore it. And that looks like a pastor saying, kind of get why this might be important, but like we're just doing a lot of other things. Like I don't even know where we'd start, how we'd fit this in. So maybe later, maybe in a few years, we'll kind of revisit this, reconsider what it would look like for us to figure this out. That's ignoring it. Or you can leverage it. And that looks like saying, I recognize that the way the people in my community communicate has changed. And if I want to continue to have a presence in their lives, continue to answer their questions, and continue to impact my community, I'm going to have to learn what it looks like to communicate to them in the way that they're communicating today. And that's leveraging it. So those are your three options. I hope that you'll choose the third one, which is going to influence where we're going from here. So does that make sense? Does anybody have any immediate questions on point number one? Does that make sense? Great. All right, so point number one is just to recognize that we're living through communication shift, which leads us to point number two, and that is that the quality of your website matters a lot. The quality of your website matters a lot. There's some people who in this room who are like, I don't even know what our website looks like. And then there's others of you who just, maybe you have a great website, but there's probably quite a few who are like, okay. But anyways, the quality of your website matters a lot. A study was done recently that said that 97%, everybody say 97%. 97% of people interact with local organizations online. Can we just all say that's basically everyone? Everybody say that's basically everyone. Okay, so 97% of people interact with local organizations online. That's through their website, social media, interacting in some form online. And so for all practical purposes, what that means is that 97% of people are going to look at your church's website, at your church's online presence, before they ever show up to your church in person. That's just the reality. The majority of people will do that. And whatever your church website communicates is the first impression that most people are going to have of your church. And for a lot of people, if we're honest, if they don't have a church background, if they don't have a background with Jesus or with faith or with religion, for a lot of people, their experience on your website is their first impression of Jesus. And so if your website communicates that your church is outdated, not only are you communicating that your church is outdated, but you're also communicating that the message of Christ is outdated. If your website is communicating that your church is confusing, not only are you communicating that your church is confusing, but again, you're communicating that the message of Christ is confusing. And those are not the things that we want to communicate to new people who we're trying to reach, right? The reality is your website, it's the new front door to your church. Dale likes it when I say that. It's the new front door to your church. And if we want to welcome people, if we want to figure out what it looks like to start engaging people, all of those things, then we have to take seriously what our website communicates. We see websites all the time that just, again, are outdated, that are not updated. Just recently, I had a call scheduled with a pastor in October, and I went to their website just to see, like, you know, what they're about, all those things. And right up top, like this big banner, it said, you're invited to our, like, s'mores and bonfire event or something. And it was dated for February of that year. That was 8 months prior to when I was looking at their website. And so things like that, we see it all the time. And what that communicates is that that church doesn't care. And again, that those are not the types of things that we want to communicate to the community that we're trying to reach. So the quality of your website, it matters a lot, which leads us to point number three, my personal passion. Now, point number three is the digital content that you produce will be crucial moving forward. The digital content. We have an article about churches who struggle with an insider focus, and there's something that I included in there about this, and I just want to read it to you because I think it communicates it well. It says, when most churches think about communications, they only think about how to better communicate with the people already in their church. Not too long ago, a church reached out to me because they were looking for recommendations on modern communications tools. I say that in quotations because they were actually reaching out to us looking for ways to do mass phone calls to their congregation. After we talked back and forth, I discovered that they weren't actually looking to adjust their strategy to reach their community. They were just looking for a tool that would adjust how they communicate to their congregation. And after gently suggesting they reconsider their strategy, they decided not to because it would be a difficult shift for the people in their congregation. Now, I'm not trying to put down this specific church. I get it. And it honestly isn't about their decisions on where they choose to invest their effort. But here's the deal. As church leaders, we focus too much on the people who are already part of our church. Heck, we focus too much on people who are already part of the church. We put nearly 100% of our energy towards things only those in our church will see. We put nearly 100% of our energy towards a service we've prepared with only our congregation in mind. And we put nearly 100% of our energy towards events and programs that only people in our church will attend. And oftentimes we call that an insider focus. A little bit of a jarring thing that I wrote, but I say that because it sets up where I'm going really, really well. There was a study that was done recently covering this shift in communications and how it relates to the topic of suicide, a really big topic. And what they discovered in this study is that the majority of people who are struggling or thinking about taking their own life, they will search Google for a community of people who feel the same way, or they will ask Google if they should take their own life long before they ever reach out to someone in person, a pastor, a friend, a family member. Their first step is digital. And the reality is, and it's not just that topic, but the reality is that every single day, people in your community, whether it's big or small, rural, in a city, wherever you're at, people in your community are asking similar questions, and they're looking for those answers online. People are asking how they can have a healthy marriage. People are asking if their life is meaningful. People are asking who Jesus is. Like, people are just asking questions about their life, about how to deal with anxiety, all sorts of things. And the reality is that the church is often not showing up with the answers. We are not investing our efforts into building trust with people and answering those questions before they show up to our church on a Sunday. A lot of times our churches are pretending, really. We're pretending like people are going to show up to our church on a Sunday ready to ask those questions. And the reality is, as things have shifted, that's not how most people will do that. That's not how most people communicate. That's not how most people look to get their questions answered. And so if we want to have an increased impact and a more meaningful impact moving forward, because it's only going to move in that direction from here, then we need to look for ways that we can start leveraging our digital presence to answer real questions that people are asking, to start building trust with our community. Again, kind of back to the article I read, the more that we rely only, everybody say only, the more that we rely only on our Sunday morning services to answer people's questions and reach people for Jesus, the less effective that will be in the long run. I'm not shooting down your Sunday service. I love it. I go to church every week. That's what we do. I love it. But if that is the only strategy that we have in reaching people for Jesus, then we are going to be less and less effective moving forward. Make sense? Okay. So I want to just show you a quick graph here in your graph. That makes it sound not cool at all. I'm sorry. A quick illustration here in your handout. And I call it a new twist on the buyer's journey. Has anybody ever heard the buyer's journey before? It's kind of like a business thing. Yeah. So oftentimes businesses or nonprofits will kind of map out a typical journey that either their customer or a donor, whatever it is, will take before they say, like, buy a product or before they make a donation or all of these things. They'll kind of map out what are the steps that they take before that thing happens. And so what I did is I kind of took that process and made it look a little bit more like how we could use it in the church. This kind of covers a lot of the things we've talked about today, but I kind of laid out four stages, we'll call them, awareness, consideration, decision, and discipleship. And I'm going to kind of quickly just walk through this and kind of help us understand why this illustrates why we need content. So in the awareness stage, this is when somebody, like, barely knows about your church. They might know, like, where you're at physically. They might have seen, like, your church building as they're driving by. They might just have heard about you from, like, a friend or something. They're aware. The key word here, and I want you guys to write this right above awareness, is the word trust. Trust. And we'll come back to this in a second. The second stage on someone's typical journey alongside your church is what I call consideration. And I want you guys to write above the word consideration, write physical step. Physical step. This is when somebody has actually taken like a physical step with your ministry. They might have showed up for church once or twice. They might have attended an event that you did in the community. Maybe you've done like a serve project that they were a part of. They have done something that requires a physical, tangible step from them. And that's what I call consideration. They're considering what it would look like to become a part of your church. Which moves us to the two things that we love the most. The third stage is what I call decision, right? This is kind of that moment that they decide to commit their life to Christ. It's where they're making that decision to live their life for Him, which leads into a lifelong journey of discipleship. That is the typical journey. That's the typical path that someone will take alongside your church. Again, there's always crazy stories of stuff that happens, but typically a lot of people's journey looks like this. And our churches are really, really, really good at addressing three of these. And that is the last three. We are really, really good at engaging people when they have taken a physical step with our ministry. We are really good, once they show up on a Sunday, at guiding them towards that decision, at helping them understand the claims of Christ. We're really good, once they decide to follow Christ, at discipling them, even if we have some things to work on with our discipleship path. We get it. But when it comes to awareness and engaging people before they ever show up physically, that's where we start to get confused. That's where we start to not put as much effort because we don't understand it. And so the reality is, and again, as this chart illustration shows, people are in that stage before they take a physical step. And if we want to build enough trust that they feel comfortable, that they feel confident in taking that physical step, we're going to have to figure out what it looks like to build trust. As far as content, that's kind of like a weird word. That's kind of like a communications word. But it could be anything. It's your social media presence. Thinking through what it looks like to leverage social media, not just to post updates for your congregation. Using social media to talk to the people outside your church, answer questions, even just recording videos that talk about real things that people care about. Marriage, kids, depression, anxiety, all of these things. Like, these are things that people in your community are facing. And we have things to say about them. You could leverage a blog on your website to start thinking through how you can answer those questions online. You could start a podcast. All sorts of things that you could do. And it really depends on who you have in your church, what giftings you have. Literally, the options are like endless. But if we want to have greater effectiveness, we have to figure out what it looks like to build trust.
Hey, the episode's not over yet, but we just wanted to jump in and remind you about our first ever From Stalled to Freedom National Conference on November 4th in Greenville, South Carolina. And you're invited. This is a perfect opportunity to get away with your spouse if you can, experience a day of encouragement, and then take the weekend to rest and refresh. You can't lead effectively if you're exhausted, so we really want to encourage you to check this out. Just head to 95network.org/national conference or find the link in the show notes. We'll see you there.
All right, we are going to move on to number four. If you guys didn't like me talking about digital stuff, you'll like the next few. So number four, in all your communication, aim for inspiration more than information. In all your communication, aim for inspiration more than information. This is just a filter for you to run everything you communicate through. Whether it's your preaching, whether it's your bulletin, whether it's your website, you want to figure out how to inspire people to take a next step rather than just inform them of what that next step is. And I was just at a church recently that did this well. They were launching their new season of small groups. They kind of did small groups based on the school year. They call them seasons. So they were launching a new season of small groups. And the temptation would be to just have somebody come up on stage and just say, hey, you know, we want everybody to know we're launching our new season of small groups. It's a great way to get connected into the life of the church here. If you're interested, meet us in the fellowship hall after service. and we'll get you more information, right? Tells people what they need to know, but it's really not that compelling. And so what this church did instead is they had someone share their story. A woman was able to come up and share about how during the last season of small groups, her and two other women in the group all experienced miscarriages during that like 6 month time span. And she talked about how they were able to support each other and how they were able to just like walk that journey together because they were in a group. And what that did is it inspired people to take that next step. It gave them a practical example of why it matters. So it doesn't always have to be a story, but be willing to share the why, share the heart behind something rather than just the what. So it's a great filter for you to run all your communication through. Aim for inspiration more than information, which leads us to number 5, which is stay current with your communication by continually evaluating and updating. Stay current by continually evaluating and updating. Think back to the website that I was looking at with the 8-month-old banner. That's updating, right? Those are simple things. We want to make sure that we're keeping up with what we're communicating, that we're not, you know, promoting events that happened 3 months ago, that our sign, as Dale always likes to say, isn't promoting Easter in December, like all of these things. We want to make sure that we are updating. But also, we need to make sure that we're consistently evaluating what we're doing to communicate. And that's something a lot of times we don't take the time to do. We kind of get stuck in this rut of, well, we've always done it this way, right? And we don't think through, well, why do we do it that way? Is it still the most effective way for us to communicate? And so I just encourage you to just think through everything that you're using to communicate and just start asking the question, why? Why do we put announcements at the time of the service that we put it? Is that the most effective way to help people take next steps? If you have an answer, awesome. If you don't have an answer, it might be a red flag that says, well, maybe we should try something different. Why do you use a bulletin on Sunday morning? Is it effective? Maybe it is. If you have an answer, awesome. If you don't, you might want to reconsider if that's the best strategy. Why does our website look the way that it does? Is it working? Is it effective? Is there intention behind it? If there is, awesome. If there's not, you might want to revisit it. Just going through everything and asking that question helps us identify some of the things that we're doing, some of the things that we're investing energy in that are not as effective as we want them to be. Does that make sense? Cool. Number 6, acquire organizational software, such as OneChurch software, and consider using Asana to assign tasks for staff and volunteers. These are just some of our recommendations, but the principle is what I want to start with because that's what's more important. A lot of times we don't like the word systems in small churches. We want things to feel a little more organic. We like things to feel a little bit more like a family, right? That's what we strive for in our ministries. And so what we avoid doing is creating systems and building a structure for growth that allows us to be prepared for when God gives us those opportunities. It allows us to structure, as we talked about in the opening, to structure for growth before it comes. And so these are some tools to help you do that. OneChurch software it's similar to Planning Center, which I'm sure a lot of you guys in this room use, but it's just a way to kind of communicate with your congregation. They do like email, texting, all those sorts of things. But also it allows you to organize people who are in different groups in your church, whether that's like a serving group or a small group, so that you can communicate effectively with people in your church and just manage that process. Asana is basically like a digital task list. It helps you to manage the projects that you're doing. It helps you to assign those projects to people in your church so that you're staying organized and so that you make sure that things don't fall through the cracks, because that's often what happens if we don't have systems. Somebody new shows up and we don't have a process in place that makes sure that they are engaged with, that they're followed up with, and so they fall through the cracks. Or somebody reaches out and is interested in volunteering, but we don't have a system in place to help figure out and walk them through that process, and so their name just gets dropped through the cracks. And it communicates, again, to people that they don't care, that we're not prepared, that we aren't ready for them to take that step. And so building systems and utilizing tools like these is a really effective way to make sure that you're structured for growth. Number 7, one of my favorites. Evaluate all signage, both inside and outside, for clarity to new people. Evaluate all signage. Dale and I could share stories about signage forever. There's some funny things that we have seen in churches. But the reality is, you need to start asking yourself if everything in your church is undeniably clear. Physically, like where all of it is located. When new people come to your church, they have no idea what they're doing. And one of the ways that we prepare for them, one of the ways that we communicate that they matter, that we're prepared, that we're ready for them, is having clear signage. And so the next time that you go to your church, I encourage you to just ask if blank is undeniably clear. Like, before you even turn into your parking lot, is it undeniably clear where your parking lot is? Once they pull into your parking lot, is it undeniably clear where they should park? Once they walk into your building, is it undeniably clear where they go next? If they have kids, is it clear where they should take them? What that process is? If they don't have kids, is it clear where they go to the auditorium or the sanctuary? If you have coffee, is it clear that the coffee is free for them to take? I was just at a church recently, and just the way that they had it set up, it made it kind of look like you were supposed to pay for the coffee. And I've been in church my whole life, and I like did not get a cup of coffee, which is very rare. This is cup number 5 or 6 for me today. I didn't get a cup of coffee because I felt awkward. I was like, I don't know if this is actually free, and I don't want to steal. And just recently, this actually just happened the other day. I was at a church that I was visiting, and a woman came up to me, and she was holding cash. And she was like, do you know how much the coffee is? I was like, it's free. Like, don't worry about it. And she was like, oh, I had no idea. Like, those are the things that people are experiencing that they're asking. And we need to make sure that we're addressing those questions without forcing new people at our church to ask. If that makes sense. So we have to make sure that our signage is clear. Good? Make sense? Okay. We got 3 more. Number 8, create a central location to connect with first-time guests that's easy to find. Create a central location. I'm amazed, honestly, at the amount of churches that we visit and go to that don't have a location like this. And I think a lot of times, if we're honest, and I know this is kind of how it was in the church I grew up in, a lot of times we don't put a location like this in place because we're often not, like, expecting guests to show up. Like, a lot of times we're just, you know, we approach Sunday and we're like, oh, it's going to be, you know, me and Bill and Sally and everybody else who's always there on Sunday morning. And we miss out on those opportunities to, again, structure and prepare for them when they come. And so having a location like this is just a simple way to make sure that somebody at least meets one person when they're visiting your church, that they at least build one connection when it's their first time coming to your church. And so there are 3 things. If you decide that you want to put a location like this for first-time guests in your church, there's 3 things that are going to make it effective. And the first one is that it's easily accessible. Easily accessible. You want to make sure that this location is central, that it's easy to find, that somebody doesn't have to walk like even 3 minutes across your building to find this location. It needs to be easily accessible. Number 2, it needs to be personal. The goal behind this is not to get people's information. The goal is relational. We want to make sure that people are getting connected, are building connections, again, with at least one person. A lot of times, even in churches that have a location like this, and Dale highlighted this a little bit earlier, but the person who's, like, volunteering to do that will get caught up, like, talking to somebody else. And what happens as I'm there is I'm able to just go up and grab the little bag that they have for first-time guests, and I walk away. Nobody ever talks to me. That's not what we want. The whole purpose is not to give them a gift. It's to make sure that you're building relationship with them. And then the last one is that it's simple. The goal behind this location is not to get all their information. It's not to get their phone number, their email, their name. The goal is to build a relationship. Those things are helpful. It's great for follow-up. But our goal with this is to make sure that people are building relationships on their first, second, or third visit to our church. Which leads us to number 9, which is bring in a secret shopper once a quarter to get honest feedback. Honest feedback. When I say this, there are some organizations that do this, like, That's what they do. We do it as part of Vision Day. We have a ton of partners that do it as well. The Unstuck Group, the Ministry Mechanics. We can name ones forever. That's not what I'm talking about. When I say bring in a secret shopper, I'm saying find someone in your community who does not currently attend church. Give them a $50 or $100 gift card to literally come to your church and tell you what it was like. Not only will you find out actually from somebody who doesn't have a church brain and a church mind, what it's like to attend your church and what it's actually like, to walk through your facility and sit through your message and all of those things. It's also a cool way that you can start meeting new people, in your community who don't currently attend church. We have a little like list of questions that you can have them answer if you decide that you want to do this. But seriously, I think that this would be such an awesome way to start engaging people in your community and to start getting a fresh set of eyes on your ministry for a really low cost. And you'd be surprised at how many people would be willing to sit through your service for a $50 gift card or a $100 gift card. I would. So if you are really needing someone, I absolutely will. Yeah, so number 9 is to bring in a secret shopper once a quarter to get honest feedback. Which brings us to the last one, and this brings us full circle, is just to make clearly communicating how to take next steps a top priority. If you remember back to our purpose and kind of the why behind communications in the church, it's that communication is about leading people through their next steps with Christ from the beginning stages of faith through the rest of their journey alongside your church. And so if we want to start thinking about how to prioritize our communications, how to be effective, we have to start thinking about what it looks like to lead people through those steps from the awareness stage, through the consideration stage, through the decision stage, through the discipleship stage, making communications and next steps clear.
Well, thanks for listening to episode 89 of the 95 podcast. If you made it to this point, take a deep breath. That was a lot of material to cover, a lot to take in, and I just sincerely want to thank you for listening. Again, I hope it was valuable for you. As a listener to the podcast, we want to say thank you. If you go to our website, you'll find a little section called Shop, and in there we have a Vision Box, Dale's Book Stalled, we have 95 Network Membership, a video series called Small Church Strategies, all sorts of things, and you can get 10% off any of that just by using the code PODCAST. That's just a way for us to say thank you. And you know what? If you're not already subscribed, you should subscribe. You can follow us on any of your favorite podcast platforms or by filling out the form on our website to be notified via email whenever we come out with new episodes. And here's your reminder this week that what you're doing matters. God sees you. He sees your ministry. And there are incredible things ahead. We'll see you back here very soon.